One of the earlier stages of constructing a marketing plan for an organization are the goals and objectives of that particular company. It's necessary that these goals and objectives, among other things, are tangible goals, time-sensitive, and most importantly, obtainable. When upper management creates unrealistic expectations, things that are completely out of one's reach, the typical employee won't even try. After all, even with the greatest of effort, that person knows they'll fall short of the mark. So why should they even try? They'll just quit right away. Therefore, it's necessary for goals and objectives to be at arm's length, within our grasps, within reach. This leads to a very difficult problem found in this week's Parsha. The Torah opens with the story of an evil king, Paro, who made a tremendous decree against the Jewish people. He said that Kol HaBein HaYilod HaYora Tashlichuhu V'Kol HaBas Tichoyun, that any child, any boy that's born into the river, he shall be thrown, but any daughter will be allowed to keep alive. And therefore, there was a woman that had a tremendous dilemma when Yocheved's baby was born. She realized that by keeping him in her house, ultimately one of Paro's guards would come and rip him out of her hands, and he would die. And therefore, she ever so delicately and gently placed him in a teva, in an ark, in a basket, and put him gently into the waters. In the meanwhile, the Torah tells us, "V'tered bas paro lirchots al hayar, v'naroseha holchos al yad hayar," that Paro's daughter went down to bathe by the river, and her maidens walked along the river as well. V'tera esateva b'soch asuf, and they noticed a little basket by the water, by the reeds. V'tishlach et amata v'tikocheha, and she stretched and sent forward amata and took this basket. And Rashi gives two explanations what this means. Either that she sent et shivchata, a shivcha, a maidservant. After all, she was a princess, and therefore she asked her servants to get the basket for her. But then Rashi gives another explanation, which Rashi, who generally sticks to the simple explanation to Pashut Pshat, tells us, "Rabosenu darshu loshon yad." The language of amata corresponds to the hand. For an ama, a cubit, is measured from one's elbow to the tip of the middle finger. And therefore, "Dehem darshu et amata et yada." That when it says that she stretched out amata, it means her hand. And says Rashi, a tremendous miracle happened. Vindishtarbava amasa amot harbe. Her hand stretched forward and became many, many cubits, miraculously, so that she would be able to retrieve this basket, to retrieve the child. It's very difficult to understand. If we would see a book across the room and we're sitting down, no one would stretch their hands from where they are to try to reach that book. It's simply unobtainable. It's out of arm's reach. We would have to physically stand and walk over and pick up the book. So why then did Basia bother to grasp toward the infant when she clearly saw and knew that he was totally out of reach? Why did Basia strive after the seemingly unobtainable? And furthermore, why did God create this nes, this miracle? After all, God doesn't just do miracles for no reason. And one could say, Well, she didn't want to go into the water. But the Torah itself testifies, Vateren basparo lirchot aliyar. She was going into the water anyway. So let her walk a few steps into the water and retrieve the basket accordingly. Why was it necessary for God to do this nace, this miracle, when it seemed to be completely unnecessary? And I believe the answer comes not from a sefer, but rather from Basya's mouth herself. In the very next pasuk, she took the baby in her arms and said, "Miyaldei ha'ivrim zeh." You know, this is not an ordinary child. This is a Jewish child. You see, Basya knew nothing of miracles. She knew only that a Jewish child was being held in the balance, and that he had to be saved. To do nothing was not acceptable, for he, even though this boy was in fact a Jewish child, and in fact was supposed to be killed, not only a Jew, but an Egyptian woman, an Egyptian realized the value attached to each and every single Jewish child. It's no coincidence the name that this baby held on to throughout its life, Moshe, an Egyptian name. Now, Chazal tell us the reason why the Jewish people were fit to be redeemed is because we did not change our way of clothing, we spoke a different language, and our names were Jewish names, and therefore we did not assimilate. But what's most unbelievable is that the leader of the Jewish people, arguably the greatest man who ever existed, he, Moshe, had an Egyptian name. Well, one could say, well, that's his name. That's what he was named. But the Medrash tells us that Moshe actually had 10 names. He was named by different people. For example, his father Amram called him Chaver. His mother Yocheved called him Yekutiel. His older sister Miriam called him Yered. And his brother Aaron called him Avizanoach, the father, the leader of all seers, of all Nevi'im, of all prophets. That the Gemara in Sota on 12a tells us that his name was also Tuvia or Tov, coming from the Pasuk, Betelet Bain, when she gave birth to this child, Betero so Kitov, she saw that he was Tov, and therefore that was a Jewish name. So why Moshe? Why did he choose to go by an Egyptian name? A name given to him not by his parents, not by his siblings, but by a complete stranger. And I believe the answer is if we study the definition of Moshe's name. The Torah tells us Moshe's name means Kimin Hamayim Mishisihu, because he was drawn from the water. Moshe was arguably the greatest man that ever walked the face of this earth. He spoke directly to Hashem, Peh el Peh Dabarbo. We know that he was the vehicle that the Torah was given to the Jewish people. Moshe Kibul Torah Mesinai. Lo kam Yisrael kemoshe od. No greater man as Moshe. But nonetheless, Moshe wanted to constantly remind himself that the only reason why he was capable of reaching the highest of heights as an adult was only due to the compassion bestowed upon him while he was merely an infant. If Basya had refused to stretch herself and assist that child, there would have been no Moshe Kibul Torah Mesinai. There would have been no Moshe Rabbeinu. Says the Medrash, Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu Moshe, that God Himself tells Moshe, that Mikol Shemo Shenikra Lecha, even though I know you have many names, Eini Karotcha Elo B'Shem Shekarticha Basi Basparo, V'Tikra Shemo Moshe. I'm not going to call you by any of those names. I will only call you by the name that Basia, the daughter of Paro, called you. And I will only call you Moshe. You see, Why was it necessary for this name, for this miracle? Because when a child is at risk, when a child is in danger, and you stretch out your hands to help that child, a nes, a miracle will happen for that child. That child that you help, you save, may very well be the next Moshe Rabbeinu, the next leader for the Jewish people. But if we do not stretch out our hands to help a child, we will never see that child reach the highest of heights. And therefore, the message of our parsha is that we too must stretch our hands toward the Jewish children. It is the efforts that we make today that can promise them a brighter tomorrow and a greater future. We see from Moshe Rabbeinu, he is our teacher, that we should never underestimate the importance of early impressions on one's children. Good Shabbos.